When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
When I was like 4, 5, 6, I was like, what is this feeling so sudden and new?
I felt the moment I watched Alex Mack. Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It is season 3 and it is me, Eric Williams. I'm so happy to be back in your gay ass motherfucking ears. Ugh, it feels good. This week we have Marla Mendell of Off-Broadway's Titanic, the hit show that is receiving all the buzz in the New York Times and beyond. I've also been a fan of her since I was a literal trashy closeted teenager in St. Louis, Missouri. So we dive into that in addition to her starring role in Titanic and also her Broadway escapades. I want to say that if you were at the live show in LA 2 weeks ago, thank you. It was literally perfection and, dare I say, a goddamn hit. I cannot wait to do it again. I'm already discussing with venues for the next show in LA, in addition to a New York date. And don't worry, the other cities are gonna come. I just gotta manifest and figure it out. So, in the break since last October, since December, I've gone to be on Amazing Podcasts. I just did Sloppy Seconds with Meatball and Big Dipper, a dream come true if you haven't listened to that one yet. And if you are listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast from those girls, welcome, you fucking sloot. My faggotrinis are here. And it feels so good. But with that being said, I've had such a nice break. I've had also mental illness, but that's just another Thursday. We're going to get into this episode with Marla Mendell. I ask her not only about Jew shit, Titanic shit, I also ask her about doing the literal sister act musical on Broadway and who she would play if they made a sister act 2 Broadway musicale. For all my theater faggotrinis, I do ask her about working with Laura Osnes. How could I not? I'm a slut for Druma. We're going to get into this episode. Make sure you follow at Gay Ass Podcast. And if you want me to bring the show to your city, I don't know, send me a slutty, flirty DM. Have I said slutty a lot in this intro? Anyway, this is the episode. And welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast. Marla Mendell is on the season premiere of That's a Gay Ass Podcast, season 3. And the reason why I have chosen this episode to start is because this is a very big deal for me and my family. Marla, thank you for coming on. You are the moment.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. The season premiere. Yeah, I must be the moment.
You are, and you is, and you was, and you will be. I will say that the reason why this is an interesting conundrum for me, Marla Mendell, is that I have not only been a fan of yours for an embarrassing amount of time, but I'm also friends with your sister. That, to me,
Right.
There's a bit of mental gymnastics I do because, like, you are a real person, but also I've been watching you on YouTube since, like, too young of an age. What do you say to that?
I'm very old. I say that I must be
you
so
say
old.
Elder. No,
I'm,
not at
I'm
all.
Elder.
I think we're not that far apart in age. It's just like it just so happened that I was your target audience watching YouTube videos in high school, and then
correct.
I went to college like a second after you were there, and the rest is history. So thank you for coming on. And by the way, we need to give a public shout out to Lisa, your stunning sister, who is a star.
Oh, who is a star, but also was like, see a musical theater. I'm off to be a financial advisor and make so much more money than everybody else.
Which, again, star, because why
star.
Did we choose?
And I was like, don't worry, you can manage my money. LOL, I have none.
Turns out you're like, actually, can I borrow yours?
Yes, exactly.
Well, that does bring up, because if I ever have a Jewess on this gay-ass podcast, as a Jewish myself, we need to ask the first important question, which is, Marla Mandel, do you feel comfortable telling me your bat mitzvah theme?
Oh my gosh, I did not have a bat mitzvah theme. Because I am a poor Jewess. That is one thing. Sure. That is a constant theme in my life and my family. Grew up in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, was the poorest Jewish family of all of them. So wow. The only theme that I remember is that I was a conservative Jew. I had pneumonia. Yes, I was davening.
During your bat mitzvah?
During my bat mitzvah, I had full-blown pneumonia. I davened away for 3 hours with a hoarse voice, which, you know, for a singer, for a 13-year-old bat mitzvah diva singer, that was my worst nightmare. I thought that I looked absolutely incredible, where I had like a little ringlet curl, like a single sure. ringlet, an updo. I had to have my shoulders covered because it was conservative, as you know. But
so would you do like a full fur shawl?
It was just like, it was a suit jacket. I was like, it was like a businesswoman special, except I was 13 years old with pneumonia.
13 going on 50.
Yeah. Going on 50. Yeah.
Wait, what was Lisa's?
Lisa's theme. She did not have a theme, but her hair, we all had hair themes, and hers was butterfly clips. Like that was the moment. So, you know, like when you had just like little tiny, I wouldn't call them cornrows. They weren't cornrows because that's appropriation, but they were something equally as offensive because they had butterfly clips. And my sister Olivia and I thought that she looked absolutely gorgeous.
So listen, you might not have had a theme, but you were telling hair stories, and one might argue that that's even more powerful.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
Were you a bat mitzvah singer Jewess that wanted to add vibrato to your Torah portion?
1,000%.
Yes. Were you able to pull it out even through the pneumonia?
I definitely was. And I knew that I was riffing too. Because you know how they you have
not
to like
read. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Sure.
You know they have a little thing. Yeah. So I was like working and serving my Torah portion.
She came to slay and Adonai said.
Yeah. She slayed. Yeah. And Adonai said, work.
God, I hope God's
and
gay.
I work. Oh yeah.
Do you think God is gay?
Well, God is a woman, so I wouldn't be surprised if God was also. I hope God is gay. Well, then why would he create they would create homophobes? Because she has a great
true.
Sense of humor.
She's hilarious, and I feel like her type is like Bull Dyke. Like God is a woman who is gay and is like wears like a long dress, tells Love. Many hair stories, but also is a bit of a conniver, which is why we have world disasters and war. She's a slut for drama, and that's why she creates poverty.
She's a slut for drama.
Yeah. Sure. So let me just tell you why. This is a big deal for me. I've interviewed some gorgeous, amazing people, and it's rare that I feel any sort of butterfly, speaking of the clips. But for you, there's like a, it's right now I'm communicating with my 17-year-old self, which was in a very different worldview. Sure. And so the video, I think that was my entree. And let's keep in mind again, I was auditioning for schools for musical theater as well. And so I saw the CCM clips of yours. And I was also seeing the Michigan ones. I was seeing the Carnegie Mellon ones. And you had a video with you and your gorgeous voice teacher where you are singing The Man That Got Away. Sure. And I'm hearing belt. I'm hearing legit. I'm hearing. Did it go to your head when you knew that you were getting all of these views and these teenagers that were slurping over your voice?
At the time, yes. I was like, I'm 23. YouTube just came out. Yeah. I am so fierce. And then Natalie Weiss came out. And I was like, oh, okay. Here we go. Second place.
Wait, I never thought about the Marla Mandel Natalie Weiss conundrum.
Oh my gosh. We came out at the exact same time. It was so, I mean, talk about slut for drama. She followed me into a tasty delight when we were 23. We had never met before, but we knew who each other, we knew who we were via social media. This is like when it first came out. She follows me into a tasty delight on 46 and 9th. My petty slut for drama ass was like, I'm going to pretend like I don't know her. And I didn't go up to her and I walked right out. Love her to death.
Love her to death. But she followed you in and you said, who?
I'm not
playing
into this.
Sprinkle.
She was being so loud with a French, came in with a little fellow gay. They were being so loud. They kept looking over and I was like, hee hee hee. I'm taking my vanilla ice cream and I'm walking out of this joint.
Please tell me that the time you actually met her, you still pretended like you didn't know her.
No, I mean, I became much kinder, and I actually love her to death. I've never told her that story. I don't think I've ever said that story out loud to anyone on a podcast. So if she hears this, Natalie, I'm so sorry. But you could say that I walked so Natalie could sing and Miranda Sings could really sing.
And no, Miranda Sings could make money. That's the thing is, like, I feel like there's no shortage of talent in the world, but there is a shortage of people like your sister who can actually take paths that make money. And yeah. I find that Miranda Sings took that path.
She took the path. She took the path. I'm honestly, and I'm so here for it, and go off and make that money, make those millions. She had she had a gimmick and she capitalized on that.
Got to get a gimmick and got to get a check. And she did both. Do you know what she, you know what's so funny to me is that you also, and of course we'll get into Titanic, but like I'm obsessed that you had a feature in Forbes magazine and then you posted like, LOL, I'm still poor and I'm in Forbes magazine. I find that to be really, really refreshing to see that honesty.
Oh yeah. You know, and what's really funny is that Lisa wrote me, my sister, and she was like, what's so ironic is that I'm the financial advisor and you are in Forbes before me. And I was like, well, what's ironic is I'm still poor. That's a constant theme in my life. Hopefully one day I'll have some money to show for myself. But
you should you should be drowning in it right now. I find that there is a disconnect with, you know, like people like look up celebrities and then there is postings like their net worth is $28 trillion. And then you talk to the actual person. They're like, I'm renting, like whatever it is. I feel like there is going to be a time, and it of course should be yesterday, where what people's vision of you, which is see you owning the Palm Springs house and the New York pied-a-terre and the boo 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 boo. And like, listen, it's you deserve. And that brings me to a question, which is when you do inevitably reach the cover of Forbes because you are one of the only Broadway comedy TV writers to be a millionaire.
One of the only Broadway,
You're the first Broadway person to reach a actual net worth of $1
million. $1 million.
And let's say you grow that wealth by investing in Wicked. Then you grow that wealth to be able to purchase property. Where is the first place you purchase? And this, like, and you can get a nice home. I'm not talking about like we're scraping the bottom of the barrel, but I'm saying like you have money to buy a place in a great spot in LA, New York, elsewhere. Where and what do you buy?
I buy here. I buy a loft. All I ever want. I don't need a lot. You know what I mean? Like I don't need Real Housewives money. But if I could have a beautiful loft somewhere in Brooklyn in like Park Slope, that would be or Williamsburg, LOL, even though I'm 20 years too old to live there. But or East Village. Like I know I'm listing very lame places, but they've just been dreams of mine.
If it ain't broke.
Yeah, right. Exactly. If I could have a loft in New York City, a small loft to call my own, that would be my dream achieved. That's all I've ever wanted.
We don't ask for much.
I don't need multiple homes, you know? I just want some place in New York to call my own because mortgages now, I'm a street easy whore. I look at street easy literally every single day and I'm like, oh, great, another home I can't buy. But mortgages now are less expensive than rent.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have to tell you something.
I can barely afford my rent.
Well, and who can? My husband is someone who likes to put, in a beautiful way, he likes to put things up on his social media about like different big moments in our lives. And one moment now is we are people who aspire to one day own a house. And we were living in New York for a long time. Now we're in LA, which of course is LOL. Will we ever be able to live here and buy a house? However, we got pre-approved for an amount that in any other city would be like, you know, we'd be fine. But in LA, it is so tough. And now we've looked at a couple places already. And I like that he is, you know, letting the world know, but it's also now people like, you're looking at a house and now they think that we are the people that are the first Broadway millionaires. However, it feels so dark-sided because how are we supposed to have a base level of life niceness and but not be making $2 billion a year? I just don't understand how people do it.
Oh yeah, it's wild. I have two friends, Ryan and Jonathan. They live in Los Angeles. When they were looking for a home, they said that they would exit the home and two soulless gay robots that looked exactly like them would enter the home with inevitably more money.
So they ended up
finding a home in Echo Park, but they said it was just like, it was crazy.
Well, mazel to them for getting one in Echo Park, because we love the location. And by the way, I do know exactly who you're referring to, Ryan O'Connell from the incredible show special on Netflix, which I devoured. And wait, what's the status on the show? Is there a status?
The status is he was like, I'm done. he just didn't think that there was anything more to tell in his story. So after two seasons, it was done, which is great. Not financially, but I love a two-season moment to be like, you know what?
Yeah,
I'm going out while I'm ahead, and so.
And you'd rather do that than be like begging for something that like you're not sure
exactly
people are gonna give. Yeah, that's a power.
And also,
move.
It was so successful that he's just like he's off and running. He's selling movie scripts. He's selling books. Like he is a prolific entertainer.
Entertainer who happens to be fucking hot as hell and is a hopeful guest on That's a Gay's podcast in the future. So we're going to manifest that.
Season four premiere,
Ryan O'Connell. So then let us go into a segment.
Do you hear that?
Well, no.
Oh, that was my... Oh, good. There's somebody at my door. I'm just going to take you to the door for a second.
Take me to the door. Is she getting a package?
She's getting a package. I only buy things off of Amazon now because I have no time to do anything.
Listen, when she's doing 15 shows a week.
I'm the grandparents from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. I literally am in bed all day long. I rise from my grave and my coffin to do a show. I do not have time to go to CVS, so I order everything off of Amazon.
Which, listen, this is something that I've talked about before, is that theater actors, my long story short is that I did theater for a while, and then I was trying to do more of the comedy TV film thing, which is probably why I'm in LA now. And I never worked harder than when I was doing shows and felt like I was never being paid less than I deserved. I just...
Sure.
You know what? Like I just feel like the theater is the hardest job.
Hardest.
And it is so... I can only imagine the Willy Wonka lifestyle, because you're also belting your tits off. And so that being said, I do... Why don't we go into the Titanic of it all? I want to ask you a question, which is that you guest bartended on Watch What Happens Live when you were promoting Titanic, which I think is a very big bucket list for any gay person, but just like any person
absolutely.
In general.
Yeah.
The first question was, Constantine, who plays Jack in Titanic, a total hottie, did he get a chance to fuck Andy Cohen?
I don't think so, but maybe Andy wants to.
He was
definitely paying a lot of attention to Connie. Connie gets so much attention from literally everyone.
Is he single?
He's single. Ladies that are listening to this podcast.
Ladies, listen, if you want a hunky off-Broadway star.
With the biggest ass on off-Broadway.
Oh, God. Wow,
I live with him, too. He can probably hear this conversation. We live together. We are
non-sexual
life partners. Yeah.
When's that sitcom coming out? Two gay best friends are doing an off-Broadway hit show, living together in New York. Maybe that's a little too meta, but
no, it is. Listen, it's Will and Grace, just financially unstable.
Okay, well, then that brings up a follow-up question, which is that you've heard all the controversy with the Real Friends of WeHo, and all the gays are pissed and hating this reality show about gay men, including Todrick Hall. If someone came up to you and said, I want to film a reality show about fabulous people in New York City, and you had to get out of your Willy Wonka bed, would you say yes?
1,000 times yes. It is my greatest dream to be on a reality TV show. Is that crazy?
What do you play? No, not at all. I just want to know your archetype. Are you going to be the villain? Are you going to be the voice of the audience? Are you going to be the funny friend?
I feel like I'm going to... Well, they all have the same archetype. They start out as a funny friend who seems sober, and then they spiral into alcoholism. So that's definitely my journey. And when they become alcoholics, they become really mean. And then inevitably they get kicked off the show because they're desperate for a storyline. That's definitely me. 1,000%.
Okay, I'm here.
I'm here. I am Dorinda. Clip.
Club, you know what? Yeah. Oh my God, yeah. And you're like, I used to be on Broadway, and then it becomes like we see like a very Sunset Boulevard almost, where you sort of become the Dorinda of
Yeah.
Sunset Boulevard. I see that for you. Okay, so then the next question is, you, for Titanic, you, Constantine, and Alex Ellis, you said you were, I've watched so many interviews, and I'm going to New York next month, and I'm dying and planning on seeing Titanic. And so I'm loving that the show was, quote, started as a ratchet theater. Sorry. You talk about doing the show at a, quote, ratchet theater in LA, and then you sat on the idea for years, and now it's become this, what everyone is saying is a cult hit.
It's crazy. Does it
when you first, and I know you said this in interviews, like when the idea first came up, did you actually think that it would not go anymore or anywhere, or did deep down you were like, like it's giving Erica Jane going, I'm gonna give the gays everything they want. Did any part of you be like, this is it?
No, I operate from a place of deep pessimism. Not even like practicality, just being like, no. When we were doing Ratchet Dinner Theater and Constantine had the idea, it was like, it was over a glass of wine. He was like, we're going to do Titanic next at this dinner theater. It's going to be all Celine Dion songs. Marla, you're going to be Celine. At the time, I was like, cool, tight. Never, ever going to happen. There's no way. And we sat on the idea for 2 years. And then Ty Blue, who is the director of Titanic, and he was directing these shows at Dinner Theater, he was like, I think that there's an idea there. I think there's something there. And so we literally just, we were unemployed actors. I have the same trajectory as you. I did Broadway shows. I found success in it, but I was like, I've never worked harder. I don't have weekends. I don't have holidays. I want to be a TV writer. I want to be a Tina Fey, a Rachel Bloom. Get me out of this business. And so I was sitting on my ass for 8 years in Los Angeles, being an aspiring writer and pitching and selling things. Nothing was eventuating. And so this was the only thing I had, and it was for fun. So the fact that now, 6 years later, it has gone from just doing pop-up concerts to getting producers attached to going to the asylum, to transferring to a show, to being on Watch What Happens and New York Times and all these profiles, it is out of this world insane to me.
Yeah. Well, I think it proves also that as long as you are creating and following your bliss, you have zero idea of what's actually going to take, and you can't let the fuck up, like the no's and the nothing coming to fruition to stop a fucking funny idea that you want to do, because then you might be at the fucking Dara Roth Theater living your dream. I do want to, there's so many fagatrinis who are like, take it to Broadway. Marlon Mandel, what do you say when people ask if it's going to go to Broadway, and do you think it should, or do you, what's the answer?
Absolutely.
That you give it?
I think it should. Absolutely. I want to go to Broadway. I mean,
it
listen,
should.
It should. Why not? There's no offense. Like, there's a lot of not great stuff out there. And there's a lot of incredible stuff out there. But I think based on the hype that we've gotten, the reviews, the press that we've gotten, I hope that it's inevitable. I would love that. I mean, that is my ultimate dream. Obviously, this is a dream as well. But like, now I'm aspiring. We've gotten here. I'm like, well, what's stopping us from world domination and from...
Yes.
Even a limited run would be amazing. You know what I mean? Like, let's do it like the Bring It On way. Let's do it. You know, come in. Remember that? Like, come in for like 6 weeks on like a larger tour.
Of course
I
do.
Why not?
Did I see Bring It On in that limited run on Broadway? Of course I did.
Of course I did.
Shredding my cord as they basket tossed people and then apparently were having fights backstage. Yes, I did, because none of them had done a show before. Ooh,
yes.
Messy. By the by, I do feel like if we may continue manifesting that, don't you think the West End is a Titanic-like wonderland? Those fucking Brits love a camp fest. They're going to be weeping, laughing as they sing with you.
God. No, I mean, that's what everyone says. I think, look, I don't believe anything until a contract is signed, but I think that that is within the realm of possibility. I'm going to manifest that and put that into the universe. I think that this incarnation at the Daryl Roth is literally only the beginning of what I'm hoping is world domination.
Yes, I'm breathing this in so hard and
yes,
so
thank
happy
you.
For you.
Manifest
just
it.
Like, manifest, which brings me to, let's manifest the next question and the biggest question of this gay ass podcast. Marlon Mandel, whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe?
Oh, we blame Nick at Night. Do you remember Nick at Night?
Of course.
Okay,
I do.
Great.
That
I know I'm completely
era.
Dating myself. We blame Gilligan's Island. We really blame Bewitched. That is when I knew something was up.
You felt with
Elizabeth Montgomery. I knew something was up with Samantha from Bewitched.
Is Samantha canonically queer?
Well, it seems like kind of a campy queer show. You know, like a witch that just like twitches her nose and like magic happens. Yeah. Get Smart, Agent 99. Say that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like all of those ladies from the old sitcoms, when I was like 4, 5, 6, I was like, what is this feeling so sudden and new?
I felt the moment I watched Alex Mack. Did you, were you a Clarissa Explains at all? Like what,
loved.
What were...
In fact, get this. This is a good one. My father is a composer for musical theater. He unfortunately gave me the bug that is having to do this for a living. And he was doing a regional production of his show, or he was trying to get one of his shows up. And is it Ferguson from Clarissa Explains It All was play a part. So Ferguson Darling, is that his last name, comes over to our townhome, not even a real home, townhome in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, and spends the day with us. And Lisa and I were like, it was like if Harry Styles dropped in on your townhouse. And then he wrote us like
a
note.
The camera cuts to the outside of the townhouse. Yeah. You only hear screaming. He wrote you a note?
He wrote it like, thank you so much for like letting me inside your home and like spending the day. It was like, I think we still have it. We cherished it. Again, it was like Harry Styles of the 90s.
The Harry Styles of the 90s spent time in your town home. And that is the long name of your autobiography. I'm obsessed with that story. Because that, and also, honestly, that era, I feel like there was somewhat of like an innocence, but also underneath it was a charged sexuality. Like, if I may go to Boy Meets World.
Oh my God.
For me, there was something about like Corey, the nerdy, and I'm assuming Jewish lead. And I saw the curls and I wondered what it would feel like to have my hand on top of them type of vibes. Like, there was like, this, I think because of the innocence of the era, it created more space in our brains for the nasty thoughts to come in.
Oh, yeah. I think was it Topanga in Boy Meets World?
Topanga. Even I thought Topanga was fucking like the ultimate woman. She was so hot.
She was so hot and so womanly. Is so hot.
So womanly. And yeah, she was in the show, like what, this like high school, talk about 13 going on 50. And
yeah,
she
exactly. 50,
but she like, she had the curves of a woman who saw war.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes. It was all of those shows. Hey Dude. Like any Nickelodeon show or Nick at Night show. I was like, what's going on here? So what? I should sue the network.
For making you gay. I mean, I find it so interesting because I have three brothers, you have sisters. What was your coming out moment? Like, did you tell a sister first?
Oh God.
What happened?
It was so dramatic, but also it's a great story. I was in a secret relationship my senior year of college. I was in play rehearsal. I was Marion the librarian in The Music Man. My paramour writes me a letter. I drop the letter. It's picked up by my high school theater rival, who then tells the entire school. My paramour is mentally disturbed, and she, the next day at play rehearsal, punches my high school theater rival in the face.
I'm freaking out.
I know. So then I have to tell my family. I tell Lisa first, and she's like, I don't believe you. So it was just the most wild... Yeah, she's like, prove it. Because I was dating, men constantly.
Yeah. Well, listen.
Constantly.
You had to cover up the lesbianisma. Did you say this was high school or college?
This was high school. This was my senior year of high school.
Oh,
I really decided
God.
to go out with a bang.
and the bang was your lover smashing
my high school brains
in.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to be like, and the name of my high school rival was Natalie Weiss.
LOL.
So
her name is Ariel. Ariel. You could not, you could never call her Ariel. If you said Ariel, she'd be like, it's Ariel.
She would correct you. She was, there's a very specific type of person that, and here's the thing. If you have a name that people say wrong, you have every right to correct people because you want to be called the right thing. But it's also a very tense filled exchange because you have to decide who you're going to correct. Mm-hmm. Is it worth the correction? And clearly Ariel said it was always worth it. Am I at a restaurant? Yeah. The waitress is going to call me Ariel.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So that was my experience. It was incredibly dramatic and full of musical theater, which I guess is my journey.
Was your rival in The Music Man with you?
She was in The Music Man with me. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who'd she
play?
I
was Marion. I think she was like a pick a little, talk a little. I think she was one of those people.
One of my dearest friends played a pick a little at the St. Louis Muni, if I may shout her out, Hannah Kahn, we love. But no, go on.
Oh, no, it's just that she was a pick a little. My paramour was in the ensemble. She was in the chorus. And she was fired from the play after punching my high school theater rival. And then she was, suspended from school.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, it was wild. So I was so scared that my theater teacher was going to call up my parents that I told everyone, but no one believed me. No one believed me. So then I had to like convince everyone. It was wild.
Now that's the twist. That's the twist. Is like usually people are like, you know, okay, I'm gay. Oh my God, you're going to burn in hell. Whatever it is. But cut to your fucking Pennsylvania.
Cut to my sister being like, sorry, prove it. I don't believe you.
You've
it's
never
very
once.
In theme.
It is in theme, but true to the Mindell arc, it has drama. I mean, it's giving. It's
We're
giving.
Nothing but drama.
Well, then that brings us to a segment of this podcast that I've never done before, but I'm very excited to do with you for the first time because I just got to have a dream come true. I guessed it on the Sloppy Seconds podcast with Big Dipper and Meatball. Amazing, amazing podcast. And they have a segment called Slant My Name, where they do a slant on their guest's name and you have to answer questions. Slant rhyme. My friends, I'm giving all credit to Sloppy Seconds for the idea, but I've decided to steal this and see how it goes with Marla Mindell. Let's start with Marla Mindell. Marla, who's your favorite Elphaba?
Oh, Shoshana Bean. Controversial.
Same, and that is correct. That is a correct answer. Shoshana Bean.
She was the first one to take so many vocal liberties that every Elphaba had to follow suit to then one up the riffing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's always now a competition. What about, if I may do a follow-up, if tons of high school, college, young women are now singing The Life I Never Led, trying to be Marla Mindell, and like they're just like fully, you are that person to all these children, who was that person to you? Was there someone whose like song that so resonated with you, you needed to sing it? Was it like, I don't know if it would have been like a Sutton Foster, or if it was something before that time? Like what, is there someone for you that was The Life I Never Led?
I mean, my trifecta growing up was like in the musical theater era was Barbara Streisand and Patti LuPone. Mm. So like Meadowlark by Patti LuPone, I definitely sang that at my sixth grade talent show. People were like, what the hell is this girl singing?
The gall and
people
the
are
gumption.
Like, I know the gall and the gumption. People were like juggling or like twirling a baton. And I was like, I'm going to sing this 5-minute story song in which I don't even understand the substance. Yeah. My father will play the piano. And for whatever reason, it wasn't even in front. Like, it was obviously pre-COVID, but we had to film it for some reason. We couldn't even do it in the cafetorium, which was a cafeteria and an auditorium.
That is rich.
Patti LuPone is, and Barbara, they inspired my sound. And then obviously, like, you know, when I was in college, it was Idina Menzel and the Wild Party. So, like, she was formative. And obviously, Elphaba, too, because Wicked came out when I was 18.
Did you ever have did you go in for Elphaba?
I did when I was like 25 and they said that my voice was not right for it. And at the time I was so angry. But now
I would be too.
You could not pay me $5 million. You could pay me $5 million to be Elphaba. But anything less than that, I wouldn't do it.
Not worth it. We'll talk about Willy Wonka bed vibes. There's zero chance you would escape. Okay, next one is Marla Mind over Matter. Marla Mindell, are you a tarot card crystal bitch?
My sister Lisa is, and she takes tarot classes. I try to be. I'm a meditation. Mm-hmm. I'm more gray than I usually am, but I'm a Capricorn, and we're so fucking black and white.
Listen. I get it. But I do think that Jews as people benefit from meditation because of our generational trauma, creating lots of fight or flight vibes in the head. I think 1,000%. Meditation is a prescription we should always be given. Let's do Marla Mincel. What product would you sell on Shark Tank?
Shoes that when you kick the toe of them, a built-in flashlight comes out. So if you're, I don't know, in a dark space.
That's actually really good. I thought, I'm angry that it's actually a good pitch. I would 100% wear the heel that helps me find my phone when I drop it under my bed.
Exactly. It's a drunk night out. Yeah, you just kick it against the door and then you can find it. Yeah.
Stunning. Do you have a preference for which shark is your favorite? Are you a Lori girl? Are you a Mark Cuban? Are you a Bethany Frankel guesting? What do we feel?
Of course, it's a Bethany Frankel guest. I feel like that I'm selling it short because like the original judges are the best, but like anything Bethany Frankel, I am a Bethany Frankel girl.
Bethany unfortunately knows good TV and drama besides her HBO show, which was trash. Let's do Marla Mindell magazine. Which magazine made you hornier as a kid? Sports Illustrated or Cosmo?
Cosmo. Same. I think I had a subscription to that. There was like Teen Cosmo or Teen something that I had a subscription to. Loved it.
And I'm sure Sports it was still like... It was probably still up for teens, like, here's the 12 ways to lick your boyfriend's scrotum. And you're like, okay, I'm fully 11.
Devouring it. Like, I'm reading War and Peace. Yeah.
Come on. Is that Tolstoy? I wanted to make a smart reference, and I don't know. Okay, final one. Marla Mint Chocolate Chip. What's your ice cream brand of choice?
Ooh, it's Grater's in Cincinnati. Oh. Grater's Toffee Chip. Toffee Chip ice cream. From Grater's is I dream about it. You can buy them. You can buy a 6-pack of them for like $100 and they ship them to anywhere in the United
States.
And
I've been
thinking of doing it. I've done it a bunch of times.
And you should and you will. Oh, I love that so much. Okay. Thank you for playing Slant My Name and thank you to the Sloppy Seconds podcast for allowing me to lift your segment. So because you are a girlina who likes controversiana, I'm going to bring up a musical that you did on Broadway and then you're going to give me your any association or comment back. Cinderella musical, Kiki Palmer as Cinderella association.
I didn't do it with her. I hate that because I feel I would have loved her. I got out before the Carly Rae Jepsen, before the Friend Rusher, the Kiki Palmer, and I rue the day, to be honest with you.
You should.
Those women are all iconic.
The producers of Cinderella. Yeah. Can you imagine you and Fran Drescher?
Oh my God. I would die. I mean, she would be my mentor. She's a comedy genius.
Yes.
TV writer, actress. Although, lady.
She's had some controversy recently, but I don't think we need to delve into it. Why would we? Yeah. But speaking of controversy, I have to say it. Laura Osnes, what do you say?
Eek. She's in a circus in Nashville, Tennessee. That's what I have to say. She is now, I think, performing in a circus. Somebody told me that. Listen. It's so crazy. The only thing that I will say about Laura Osnes is that she was an unbelievably kind human being. And she took us all to the Olive Garden one day in between shows. The Times Square Olive Garden, which was known for having roaches in its soup. But I'll forget that. She only ordered a soup and salad, though. I was like, if you're at Olive Garden, you go off.
When you're here at your family and you overindulge.
Yeah. Yeah. And you eat the unlimited breadsticks. So that's my hot tea on Laura Osnes is that she's only a soup and salad girl.
She gets re-canceled for only being a soup and salad girl. I cannot wait for the headlines.
Oh, Laura. Poor Laura.
Well, poor all of us.
All of us.
Okay. So then let's talk about Sister Act on Broadway. It is no secret that the thing that made me gay was that franchise growing up. Were you, when you heard The Life I Never Led, if we may go back to that, did you know that it was going to be sung by children for centuries?
No, I had no idea. You know, let me tell you something. Sister Act was my favorite movie as a teenager. I saw it 6 times in the theaters. I had the cassette tape. When I found out that, and I loved Sister Mary Robert, when I found out that Wendy McKenna was lip syncing, it's not her actual singing voice, I was devastated. It's like a dog died. And then when I got the audition for it, I was like, there's no way I'll ever get this part. So it was like divine intervention. And
when you found out you got it?
I was seeing a nymph show. Cesar Rocha texted me, who used to cast at Telsey. He was like, congratulations. And I was like, oh my God, what does this mean? And then my agents were like, hey, can you come down? We need to film you for a TV audition, which was just a ploy. They filmed me for an audition, and then they brought me into the office, and then they're like, you got the part. And it was my first principal on Broadway. So it was like a dream come true, and we had champagne, and it was amazing. And then I did it for two years on Broadway, which is crazy.
Two years. That gives me a little chills when I hear that story, because there's nothing I like more than hearing when people's dreams come true. I truly mean that. Like, if I see a documentary moment of like parents watching their child land something, or like, I love hearing that. And also, can we talk about the drama of Cesar and your agents?
Congratulations.
Oh yeah. Congratulations. Oh, I know. My parents were so thrilled. My dad believes he's Celine Dion right now. Like, the only thing on his Facebook are like far left memes and like reviews of Titanic.
On the right side of history, the right side of history.
Honestly.
So then let's ask the most important next question for the podcast, which is, Marla Mandel, if the world was ending, you could only save one character actress, who would you save?
I know this is so in the zeitgeist right now, but like, based on her performance in White Lotus, it's Jennifer Coolidge. It's a toss up between Jennifer Coolidge and Catherine O'Hara, to be honest with you.
Oh, both really, really
iconic,
great answers.
Just iconic women that are so funny. Like, everything they say is just, they're geniuses. Ooh, geniuses. Or Christine Baranski. Okay, that's my father, son, Holy Ghost.
Christine Baranski, Catherine O'Hara, Jennifer Coolidge.
Yeah.
If they were ever going to bring Mamma Mia back, let's say to Broadway or whatever, would you consider doing that show?
It's so funny you ask that, because I was just asked to audition for the CETA national tour of Mamma Mia.
And you said, no.
I was like, here I am, writing and starring in my own musical, and I still have not graduated. And I guess you never do, out of having to audition for anything, let alone a CETA national tour.
But see, I think that you have graduated. I think it just proves that no matter what you do, the industry loves to make you feel like you're a piece of shit.
That's true. No, I mean, honestly, I think I'm hoping Titanic is my swan song, LOL. It's the greatest thing I'll ever do, besides Sister Act. It's the greatest piece of theater. I mean, you'll see it, and it is so up your alley, and it's so up my alley, and it's literally the definitive moment of my lifetime, and I'm very happy. You know, it's not like Mariah Carey. Like, I don't need to sing All I Want for Christmas every single year. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm very happy to hang up my hat and say, this was the greatest moment of my life, and I'm going to move on.
And then you just do CETA tours the rest of your life.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, that's
And then my money runs out. Yeah, and then I do a CETA.
And then your money runs out. So if you say Jennifer Coolidge, we say Catherine O'Hara, we say
Christine
Baranski. You one day, if your schedule allows, you are going to, if you will have me, be in a live show for That's a Gay Ass podcast, because we did our most recent one in LA and it was a smash hit, and someone competed on behalf of Catherine O'Hara. We do a competition for who knows their character actress the best, and someone, Zach Noe Towers, competed on behalf of Catherine O'Hara. And I find that if you were to compete on behalf of Jennifer Coolidge, you might be a shoe-in for first place, because I would have you, of course, give an impersonation. I would have you, of course, there's a segment where we have you lip sync to a scene of one of the character actresses. And so I think we would have you lip sync to a Jennifer Coolidge, like, you're not very pretty and you're not very bright, or something like, I mean, like, we'd have to go a little niche, or you would do maybe a dance number to These Gays Are Trying to Kill Me pop remix. I'm just already thinking.
Wow.
So I want to manifest, just like you're manifesting Broadway, we're manifesting so many things. I want to manifest Marla Mandel doing That's a Gay Ass Live show at some time in this life.
You give me too much credit. I would have to really work on my Jennifer Coolidge. I would have to work on her entire biography and my impersonation. I would really have to work on it.
I have zero.
Give me a couple months and and watch me fly.
And then my dream now is to do, we'll do a boot camp documentary style of people getting ready for the, yes, the character actress competition. And then that goes to MTV, and just like Legally Blonde airing live, we then air the show live and have character dolls, and the rest is history. Wow. We just created
a new television show.
A new television show. You also are in one of the articles for Vulture. It says, quote, "The gays are here. Titanic, a jukebox fantasia that imagined Celine Dion survived the Titanic, has found its audience." You have always, in my book, been a gay icon, but how does it feel to be solidified in the canon of people that every gay person...
Of queer history?
Of queer history. You're going to be in Bros, too.
It's so funny. I never realized that we were writing something inherently queer. Like, we were just doing it to make each other laugh. But I guess because we are queer, that it has become a gay phenomenon. Every single show, you'll see it. It's like a gay football game. If gay people liked football, and there are some, or it's like a Beyonce concert. People are up in arms. I also think that it's not just for the gays. I mean, there was like, we have people from Ireland, Germany coming over. It's for any Selenophile, you know?
I was going to say, it's so smart because where I think the smartest thing that shows or any piece of culture can do is if it intersects with queer people that really can embrace it, and then there's like mainstream appeal, a part of it that really appeals to like the Celine Dion part. If you have taste, you like Celine Dion, and that defies sexuality, gender, religion, all of it. So there are so many people that are obsessed with Celine Dion for good reason, and it also happens to be most queer people. And so I could see an Irish tourist being like,
A German insert. Woman came up. Oh my God. She was like, "This is the greatest thing I've seen. Celine Dion is sick right now. So to come to see this show, it just means
everything to me.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's the next greatest thing to her concert.
You know what it is in a way? It's like the compliment that it is. It's the lower budget version of the ABBA hologram show in London right now, which is like a multi-billion-dollar. It's like people probably like, imprinting their Celine Dion's on you, because also your impression is so good and your rendition is so good. They're probably also feeling like they're seeing a Celine concert.
They are. So that's why it's a Venn diagram. There is absolutely the gay component. And listen, every gay in the tri-state area has kept this show afloat. And that's why we've been extended and we keep getting extended. But there is also this wonderful sector of older people that just love Celine Dion, or international people that don't know anything about the gay agenda, LOLOL, that are coming and they're just loving it. And it really does feel like a Celine Dion concert. I'm so excited for you to see it. I think you're going to lose your mind because
Fucking will. I'm counting down the seconds until they're going to be there in like two, three weeks. I can't fucking wait.
Get your tickets now because I think we're also selling very, very well, which is great. And Rosé from Drag Race is coming in.
Oh, she is?
Yeah. She's coming in and she's phenomenal. She's gonna
Who is she playing?
She's gonna play the part of Victor Garber. She's gonna be
the
Victor
Frankie Garber. Grande role.
Yeah, the Frankie Grande. Yeah.
Wow. Oh my God, Rosé. And Rosé's time on Drag Race proved that musical theater people, while yes, we can be annoying, also have more skills than most.
Oh,
I mean, 1,000%. Rosé can do it all.
Oh yeah,
huge. Well, listen, before we say goodbye, I have to ask you a question I probably know the answer to, but I ask every single guest on That's the Gayest Podcast, Marla Mandel. What is the best Whoopi Goldberg film?
Ugh. We know it. It's Sister Act.
I know.
Doy.
I feel stupid even asking it. Yeah, it is the correct answer. And if Sister
what
Act
What do
2,
people say?
They it's usually like a an inner battle between Sister Act 2, and then people go to Ghost. There's an interesting smattering of people that I've come up with Rat Race. Because she has a small part in Rat Race, and those are the big ones actually. But and sometimes Color Purple. If Sister Act 2 were to get a Broadway moment, would you do it?
Yeah, probably, but I wouldn't be Mary Robert anymore. I'd probably be like, I would probably be the Maggie, what's her name?
You'd be the Maggie Smith part?
Maggie Smith. I would be Dame Maggie Smith. Yeah, that's how much time has passed.
You're that old. Wow. Marla Mendell, thank you for coming on That's a Gay Ass podcast. This has been a dream come true, and I am so obsessed with you, and I can't wait to see Titanic and everybody else to see it. And now, Marla, tell us, where can people follow you?
Oh, you can follow me on Instagram at Marla Mendell. You can go onto my website, marlamendell.com, and you can buy tickets for Titanic Musical at titanicmusical.com.
And do not delay. They're selling like hot cakes. Cakes with a G. My friends, this has been an amazing episode. And Marla, thank you so much. I will see you on the Broadway.
On the off-Broadway. LOL.
Well, we're manifesting.
Yeah, we're manifesting.
Thanks for listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast with the gorgeous Marla Mendell. If you enjoyed this episode and you're new to the podcast, why don't you leave a 5-star review? You've heard it before. It makes a huge, annoying difference. So please do me a favor and right now go into that app, hit 5 stars, and write a note if you could be so kind. If you don't follow me, I'm at Eric Wills, and I'll be seeing you next week for another stunning episode. I love you.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.